G3. The Model of Being and Its Universal Laws. Number 2B.
Every big idea, great idea, has always forerunners. Just think of the Reformation. There were many, many forerunners long before Luther, Zwingli, Calvin had an impact on the world. And so also Smuts and perhaps Whitehead were forerunners of holism. But the idea really didn't click until very recently, until the last 10 or 20 years. Now, what is holism? Holism can be defined very easily in a few words. And always if a great idea can be defined in a few words, in a balanced sense, we know that it is true. Only things that have to be explained over pages and pages and defined over pages and pages, they are not true. Nature is simple, is very simple, and therefore its definition must be simple. Just think of the simple formula of Einstein, E=mc². It's so simple that one says this is really poetic. It's so beautiful, it's so symmetrical, it must be true. All right, what is holism? Holism means the whole is bigger than the sum total of its parts. The whole is bigger than the sum total of its parts. Now, again, even the Greeks were seeing that. So it is not so new. It's not the discovery of the last 10, 20 years. But it is that the last 10, 20 years have seen the impact of it, the importance of it, and begin to build a new science, a new concept of science, a new science on this concept of holism. Because when we reason out what this simple statement means, we see that it evolves in a natural way to a very great, complex sense of reality. How does it evolve? What does it mean when we see this short definition of holism? I just enumerate quickly a few implications that we can draw from it. One is that the parts apparently must be related to the whole. That the parts are related to the whole. And consequently, naturally, they are related to all other parts. So there are no isolated parts. There are no isolated ideas. There are no isolated elements, whatever we can say. Can you see? Now, suddenly, relationship becomes more important than the objects, the parts. The parts, the objects, the elements are no more so important, but what becomes important is the relationship that every element or part is related to the whole, and because it's related to the whole, it's related to every other part. The Chinese had some kind of a saying that I can't repeat exactly in words, but the meaning of it is that if we cut a blade of grass, it shakes the universe. See, that gives an indication that the smallest part has an impact on the whole universe. And this is what we have to see. Then we can solve the world problems of today. The environment problem, the ecological problem, the world problems, if we can see that. That what the individual does is not just an individual matter, but it's a universal matter. What the individual thinks is something that touches the whole world, and not just the individual. A further point that we can deduce from it would be that reality implies that there are various structures on various dimensions, that the whole is many, has many levels of wholeness, and that therefore, because every part is related to the whole, every part is related really to many levels of that wholeness, to the spiritual, to the psychological, to the material, to every level of reality. So that no part is actually existing just on one level, but through the structural and dimensional sense of the whole, every part is somehow related to every level of experience. If we understand this, we will understand our chart. When we come back to the chart, I will give you one or the other example that shows that one part of the chart is always in relationship to the whole chart, and therefore in relationship to every other part of the chart. And only if we understand that model of being in that way, we really understand that chart. A further implication is that because the whole embraces a whole hierarchy of levels, therefore we have a holarchy, a holarchy, the holos as a hierarchy, which one calls holarchy, which means that the whole has a hierarchy of levels, which show that the moment we touch one level, that we touch one level of a whole hierarchy, so that no level is isolated, but every level is one with all other levels of consciousness and experience. These statements at the moment seem to you very theoretical and perhaps a bit difficult to understand, and that's all right for me, and for you it should be all right. It's always so that when one introduces a new subject, that at the beginning it seems strange, and everything that seems strange also seems to be not quite trustable and perhaps even wrong. But that's what we have to do. We have first to introduce it, even if it's not fully understood, even if it's a shock, even if it gets a counter reaction. But I promise you that as we go on, this concept will come up again and again, and by recurring again and again, and by recurring in different connections and different relationship, they begin to become very tangible. And at the end of the week, I'm sure you are very happy about this new concept of science. So, a further concept which we get through that holism, where every part is related to the whole, you can see that this is not a static concept. Because the whole is always new and is always different, therefore we get a very dynamic relationship of the parts to the whole, and not a static relationship of a part to the whole, which means that the world is always new, is at every moment a new world, and that it means that there are dynamic laws ruling the whole, which is a quite a big thing, because then the moment we have dynamic laws, we must understand something about cybernetics, because cybernetics is teaching how the change is governed, how change can be, how change can go on without bringing disbalance into the system. So that the system is always in balance and in harmony, though there is a constant change going on, because change usually brings with it the concept of a crisis, of a catastrophe, because one resists changes. But new science builds on the cybernetic law of the control system of changes. So holism cannot be understood without really understanding divine cybernetics. This will occupy our thought towards the end of this week for quite some time, perhaps a half a day or a whole day. We further see that what the scientists have seen, that actually behind what appears to be a mind-matter universe is actually a transcendental universe, a universe of spirit, so that we see that holism is a spiritual concept, that holism is only possible in the framework of spirit and spiritual, because the whole has no limits, or it couldn't be the whole if it would have limits. The moment we take off limits, time limits, space limit, we have to do with a spiritual concept, because the spiritual means it has no limit. It's taking off the limits. That's how you can define spiritualization. You can define it as taking off the limitations. That's spiritualization. And when the limits are taken off entirely, then what is left is spirit, pure spirit. So in this way, I just pinpointed a few important points that will have to change our whole attitude towards reality, towards, later on, towards understanding the textbook at all. Because we will see that Mrs. Eddy, who lived in the last century, therefore in the old science, wrote the textbook already on the basis of a new science, as a new scientist. As a new scientist who, as we will see, is still far in advance to the new scientists in the world, those who call themselves new scientists. Still far in advance, but we'll see that there are stages and stages of development that lead finally to the science of spirit. I can also ask, in order that we know a bit more what holism implies, I can ask, what are the characteristic traits of holism? Well, holism naturally means that the cosmos is an indivisible whole. Think of it, that the cosmos is an indivisible whole. The cosmos is not a sun and then nothing, and then around the sun somewhere a few planets circling around, and then again a lot of nothing, and then even more a lot of nothing until you come to the Milky Way, to the galaxy, and then a lot of nothing until you come to other galaxies, and so on, finally finding the cosmos. That is the old thought of thinking in isolated terms and in isolated objects. Now, if we go out from the cosmos as an indivisible whole, then we have a cosmos and a whole, a holism, that is constantly in motion, that is dynamic, that is living, that is like an organism, constantly living, constantly evolving within itself. So holism means that we have to go out from the whole and not from the parts. This is the greatest thing, because the old science always went out from parts and were investigating parts and were thinking parts can be overviewed. They are not so big that one could not overview. Is that the right term? Overview them, have a overall view of the parts. So they started always with the parts, thinking that if they can find out how the parts behave, that then the total of those parts and the behavior of the total of those parts would be the solution of the whole. That was the great mistake. It seemed logical at that time, but when we approach the subject from the point of view of holism, we start out with the whole and never leave the whole. That's the point. We never split up the whole into fragments. That's no more holism. Holism means that we go out from the whole, say that God is all in all, that God is all, I would say, and never leave it, so that every part really is reflecting the whole, so that no part is qualitatively smaller than the whole. So we begin to contemplate and investigate reality from the point of view of whole, which is an integral whole, which means that all parts are integrated into the whole, that all parts are related to the whole, and therefore that the whole is like a complex network of relationship. Now we come to a new concept of a network of relationship, where we see that it is like a spider web, that is a network, and we see that if we change in a spider web just one little part, the whole spider web moves, and every point in the spider web takes on another place. So it is not just that if we move one part, that is an isolated action or activity, but it always concerns the whole and has always impact on the whole. Can you see what's coming up? That everything we do has an impact on the whole, though we may not see it, that everything we think in this world has an impact on the whole, no matter if we see it or don't see it, it still has it, because it's a whole network of relationship. Everything is interrelated, is interdependent, and so we can see there is no more an isolated man. Man is no more an isolated being and can no more behave like an isolated being and say, all that matters is what I do with my life and the rest can go to hell. He can no more say that. The old scientist had a right to say that. He was living in a closed system. We are living in an open system, in an infinitely open system. So instead that analyzing an object, as old science did, holism does no more know isolated objects. It always thinks in, not in things, but in processes, in relationships. This is new. The old scientist always had objects as the object of investigation and was investigating and analyzing an object. The new scientist is interested in the relationship, in the dynamics of the relationship, and investigates the relationships between the object. We have seen that very clearly over the last few years in the summer school. When we did text interpretation, we already used the holistic method of text interpretation, where we said not the terms that we read in the text are important, but the relationship between the terms are important. The relationship between sentence and sentence is important. The relationship between paragraph and paragraph is important. The relationship between chapter and chapter is important. And we have seen that that which is not printed out black on white is the important thing, and not the terms that are printed out black and white is the important thing. That was a holistic method of text interpretation. And you can see that we are using a very, very modern, up-to-date method that is hardly known today in the world. Yes, so you can also see, because people are always interested in solving their problems, you can see that holism would say to each individual, don't try to solve your individual problem in the first place. If you have what you call an individual problem, that's a part. But holism says the part is connected to the whole and can only be interpreted rightly and treated rightly from the whole. So practice in Christian Science takes on a completely different standpoint. That standpoint that says, I have no individual problem. The only problem is, do I have a right concept of the whole, the undivided whole? And only if I have a consciousness of that holistic science, of divine science, then I can see that through deduction and without leaving wholeness, I can really see the individual problem in its proper light. Only the bigger can know the lesser rightly. The smaller cannot know itself rightly. Error cannot know itself rightly. Error will always have an erroneous concept of error. We only can go out from the bigger, which is truth, and so we must see that this holistic sense will have a great impact on the practice of Christian Science. But as I said, for the moment, for today, we don't want to make too many connections with Christian Science. We have then, from tomorrow on, another 5 days where we can do that. So let's go on with contemplating the proposition of holism. Another point that holism will bring to us is something of greatest importance. It's overwhelming. If we think in holistic terms or in the holistic method, then we think always about the whole. What means the whole? The whole means that there is oneness. We cannot have wholeness without oneness, because everything is included in that whole. There is nothing outside the whole, therefore everything is one. And therefore we'll see that if we apply a holistic method of consciousness, that will always bring us to the whole, to oneness, that all shall be one. It means something quite new. It means that a holistic science suddenly has something which the old science never had and always fought against it, namely that the science has a meaning. The old science had no meaning. You were not allowed to put meaning into the old science. That's why they could build an atom bomb that can destroy the whole world, that can destroy the whole mankind. Because they said, well, we have to do with physical laws, and that's that. And science has no ethics, has no moral, does not need to have ethics, does not need to have morals, does not need to have meaning. And so the old science is that destructive science that will destroy, if we go on with it, will destroy the earth and humanity. So it is time that we wake up that the old science is unscientific. This is a hard word. But we can see now that the new science, which is holistic, is a humanistic science. It's very human, because it has a divine aim. Namely, if I call divine, it has a holistic aim that all should be one, that oneness is the effect of the new science. Therefore, that holistic science has a principle, or is a principle, is a new principle, with the aim of oneness. If we put that into our terminology, it is a divine principle that is always love. Yes? For the first time, you read in these books of the new thinkers, I can quote a German philosopher, who really brings out these things in a quite an unexpected way. In his latest book, he repeats a few times that holistic science is the principle, is the divine principle love, the same terms as we find in the textbook. It actually means that holistic science is a science that builds on a holistic principle, which is divine, because holistic means God in the religious term, and that principle is love, with a capital L. What means that love? That love does not mean that people love each other and don't hate each other and don't kill each other anymore. Love is a capital L, in Mrs. Eddy's term, means that the principle is always expressed, that the principle is never without its manifestation, that the principle of perfection is always manifested as infinite perfection. That's holism. So can you see now, suddenly, the principle love is no more a religious aim, it's no more an aim of ethics or religion. It suddenly becomes a scientific fact, an element that is innate in the holistic science. So that from this point on, we can no more talk about science without talking about theology. Now suddenly science and theology becomes one. They can no more be separated, as they were, as you know, in the Middle Ages. That they were with the old science coming on in the late Renaissance, theology and science were separated, so that the church didn't have any more any say in the sciences. And for that time, it was the best thing that could happen. But what is right at one period may no more be right at another period. It's no more right in this period in which we live. In the period which we live, we can no more separate science from theology. It must be a science of God. And holism is that science. That innate within it is that science must have a meaning, and that meaning is not the human meaning, it's the divine meaning, namely to bring out the oneness of being. Yes. Okay, we make a break here.